You might have seen the Australian Story program this week about the campaign of an English woman, Rosie Ayliffe, whose backpacking daughter Mia died in Queensland 2 years ago. Rosie Ayliffe is trying to draw Australians' attention to what she sees is underway right under our noses, but we've been slow to respond to: exploitation and other risks to backpackers on working holiday visas. Backpacker tourism is not only a valuable source of income for Australia, it's seen as an important source of labour for rural areas. So much so that the Australian government launched a $10 million promotional campaign in London last year trying to lure backpackers here, partly because our farmers need them as workers. But critics say the government should not be doing that if it's not then looking after the travellers on the ground. Now, in a moment, I'll introduce a couple of people who've been monitoring the situation to whom we spoke yesterday. But first, an edited excerpt of part two of the Australian Story program, which goes to air this Monday.
Farming in Australia is just one big crazy party.
I have to complete 88 days of regional work in order to get my second year visa to live in Australia.
But when you do this kind of work that we have to do to get the second year visa, you will encounter a lot of bad stuff.
So it's been 3 weeks of sitting in a hostel doing nothing at all. People are waking up early in the morning doing nothing. People are broke. It's $200 to live in the countryside in a little room. Don't have your own kitchen, don't have your own space. For me, it's really annoying, as it's just mentally disturbing to sit every day and doing nothing.
That's from the next installment of Australian Story, and compared to some of the other stories coming in, it's a pretty benign account of hardship. Senator Linda Reynolds is from WA. She's a former Deputy Federal Director of the Liberal Party, and she sits on the Government Committee of Inquiry that's looking into the creation of a modern slavery act. And she has another role too, which we'll come to later. Welcome, Senator Reynolds.
Good afternoon, Geraldine, and thank you so much for your interest in this.
And Jenny Stanger is the National Manager of the Salvation Army's Freedom Partnerships Program. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
Now, Senator Reynolds, to you first. Rosie Ayliffe spoke to your committee, I understand. Could you now put the conditions that some backers are dealing with, would you, into the category of modern slavery?
Well, I certainly think that it does come under that category, but it's only based on the knowledge that I've now received from learning what's happening in the UK. And yes, I do, because these people are exploited and they don't have the ability to readily leave. And today, when people think about modern slavery, people still think about people in shackles and chains. But today, slavery happens quite often in plain sight, and it's no longer just the physical shackles, but the psychological ones.
Well, is it you've got no choices? Is that what you mean?
Exactly. You've got no choice but not, you know, to leave. So in some ways, it's a form of bonded labour.
And what did she talk to you about that made the greatest impact on you?
Well, her courage and her bravery and her passion to make sure that no other family goes through what she has after the tragic death of her daughter. So sometimes, you know, it takes people in those circumstances to really send us all a wake-up call about what's happening in our backyard.
Now, Jenny, do you also put the situations of some backpackers in the category of slavery or not?
I mean, I agree with Senator Reynolds' assessment of the situation, where if someone's not offering their labour or services really voluntarily, then you're really potentially in a slavery-like condition or pretty much one or two steps away from slavery. So exploitation is a precursor to a slavery-like condition. If you add a few more elements, like incurring a debt, an unreasonable debt, taking away of passports and threats of violence or threats of deportation or other kinds of threats, that's when you're moving down that spectrum of having a job that you're freely participating in to a job that is compelled.
But, I mean, they have choices, don't they? They might want a visa. You've got to work 88 days in order to get the chance of a second year visa, but they don't have to. I mean, they could go, couldn't they?
Look, I guess, you know, one could make that argument, but I think with the vulnerability that so many young people have just inherently, age, not having the resources to even leave that situation, we know that a lot of young people aren't that great at managing their money, and they probably come to some of these situations expecting to be able to get straight to work and finding themselves really without enough resources to get out of that situation. If someone's passport is being held by a working hostel or someone else...
So what, that happens a lot, does
in
it?
Service, well, we've been hearing about it. And I think I've spoken to Rosie over the last week since Australian Story aired, and she's pretty much being overwhelmed by more and more stories from backpackers describing things like sexual assault, threats, and a lot of conditions that are pretty concerning.
I mean, holding your passport is quite outrageous, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting because that's one of the key indicators of human trafficking globally. And yet it does seem to be a practice that we're hearing about is fairly common, particularly amongst working hostels. So I think we need some real clarification as well from law enforcement and government on...
And have they been extended? I suppose I've got to ask this question to be fair. Have the hostels extended financial possibilities to these young people? And they say that's their sort of security?
I think what we're seeing are people being lured to hostels for work that doesn't necessarily materialize when they arrive. And in episode two, I'm assuming we're going to see some real strong case examples of that. So you need to pay for the bed in order to get the job, and you need the job in order to pay for the bed.
Gotcha.
So I think it's quite easy for someone to start mounting up a debt that can be quite difficult to pay off.
I've got a few of the letters that she has been, emails she has been getting. Some are defamatory, to be honest, and I certainly couldn't read them out. But there is one here from one man called Phil. My first day on the farm consisted of being shown what to do and then working for 8 hours. So there was no health and safety talk explaining the dangers of snakes and spiders, even though the plants were full of redbacks. There was only a 15-minute break in the whole 8-hour shift, and the use of the toilet was for break time only. I spent about 3 months at this farm. Every day we were told we weren't picking fast enough. I felt like quitting on a daily basis. The bad thing is that this was one of the best farms in the area, and I'd heard stories of people being verbally abused on other farms, and the piece picking rates would sometimes equal less than $10 an hour. Now, that's just one of the stories. There were some other more difficult ones where people felt, well, I'd say under threat, certainly not treated with a great deal of respect. So, I mean, Senator Reynolds, I suppose I'm also hearing that clip that the Australian government has sort of said, come to the outback, it's a permanent party. Certainly not what the people are saying.
Well, look, I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, 320,000 working holiday makers spend about $3 billion in Australia every year. And the fact is we need them because Australians don't want to pick our fruit and veggies, and they don't want to work in hospitality generally. So without them, we wouldn't have fresh fruit and veggies homegrown in our supermarkets, and we certainly would lose a lot of tourism business. So we actually need them more than they need us, because they can just as easily go to the United Kingdom, go to the United States, or go to New Zealand, and we have to make sure that we look after them. But most of the 320,000 have an overwhelmingly positive experience of Australia, and I think it's important to remember that they do love coming here. We love having them. You know, they certainly contribute to our society and to smaller communities. But where there is an opportunity for exploitation, and in this case, the allegations are in some horticultural businesses and in rural and remote areas, we've got to make sure that we look after them.
Yes. I suppose the question is, this can't be good for our international reputation either, can it? I understand there's been quite a bit of coverage in the UK about this Australian Story program, and the audience responses there have been highly critical of Australia for not doing more.
Well, look, if this is found to be modern slavery, I'd say this, is that we are now one of the first countries in the world to have a look at what slavery looks like today and to consider taking action. And the committee is bipartisan. We've had a look at what they're doing in the UK under Theresa May's leadership. So we are very open to having a look at this in our own backyard.
So what is happening? What are you planning?
Well, look, what the committee's doing is we've got hearings happening at the moment where, you know, we heard from Rosie and from many others about what they see as either modern slavery in Australia that's not yet recognised as modern slavery, but also what Australians are inadvertently contributing to slavery-like conditions overseas through the clothes we wear, through the food we eat, and through the supply chain. So it's a very comprehensive inquiry.
Right. But I was thinking, I suppose, particularly about, I mean, is there any effort, for instance, to sort of break the nexus between accommodation and work and the chance of a second year of visa?
Well, I'm certain that that's going to be one of the recommendations of the committee, in addition to establishing modern slavery legislation here. But again, we've actually got to recognise it for what it is. And it's not just something for government, it's also something for local communities. You know, it's if it's hidden in plain sight in regional communities, then we've also got to make sure that we educate local communities, local law enforcement, local councils, to what to look for. And that was part of the important experience in the UK, is actually educating everybody, a bit like domestic violence. You know, until recently, that was also hidden in plain sight, and it's taken a community-wide effort to actually identify it and start addressing it.
Okay. Jenny Stanger, you have another idea, local information hubs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just, you know, if I was a backpacker and I was arriving in a rural or regional area to come and do my farm work, it would be, you know, just like how we have visitor centres across the country for tourists. It might be quite helpful for backpackers to have a central place where they can go and get independent information, not just about their work rights, but about what resources there are in the community and who they can contact in the community if something isn't right or if they do have a problem. Who can they trust and who's there to help?
What about setting up licensing bodies for labour hire contractors? Some of the states, Queensland and Victoria, are doing just that. And like the National Farmers Federation says, look, if this is not done in a national way, forget it, it won't work. Now, what do you think about that?
Well, we agree, and we have been campaigning for a few years now on a Commonwealth licensing scheme. The UK has done it. And so far, the review of the UK model has shown for it to be an effective and necessary tool, particularly in weeding out dodgy labour hire subcontractors.
What have they done exactly?
So they've set up something called the Gangmasters Licensing and Abuse Authority. It's a program they've been running for about 14 years now. And it arose out of a pretty tragic incident when about 30 cockle pickers, Chinese cockle pickers, drowned. They were being controlled by a gangmaster or a labor hire contractor. And just out of a lack of awareness about what they were doing, they all ended up drowning when the tides came in they were picking cockles. Quite a tremendous tragedy. And what they've been doing is they've created a regime for licensing, but they've also have an enforcement and intelligence gathering function as part of what they do. So it's not just a tick box exercise of, you know, filling out the right papers, but they have an enforcement and intelligence gathering function, which have proven to be quite crucial in them weeding out the good guys from the bad guys, and also uncovering criminal enterprises and referring those situations to criminal justice agencies.
Now, before we go, I just have to ask you, Senator Reynolds, because I noticed that you are head of the chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters.
Yes.
Your fellow WA Senator Scott Ludlam has resigned because he had dual citizenship, which apparently is not allowed for federal senators. Is that a surprise to you?
Look, it was a surprise to me, and while Senator Ludlam and I are not exactly on the same side of many arguments in politics, he has been an incredibly hard-working senator for the Greens and for Western Australia, so I am very sad, you know, sad for him. But ultimately,
how could you not know? I don't understand.
I don't understand the circumstances either, but ultimately for Western Australia there won't be a huge implication because he will be replaced by another Greens senator.
Okay, and like all the bills that he's voted on, like that's what we're all wondering, you know, whether retrospectively those bills are null and void because he wasn't really had the right to sit?
Well, that's now an issue for the High Court sitting as the Court of Disputed Returns. So I think this is going to be another challenging issue for them.
I mean, you knew about this citizenship rule, I take it, did you, Senator Reynolds?
Look, I think all of us do. The Constitution does have a number of disqualifications from becoming a member or senator. So it is not unknown, but in terms of the circumstances of Senator Ludlam, he's not the first one who's been caught up recently
No.
and been disqualified from the Senate.
Yeah, certainly extraordinary, as if we need this. All right. Well, look, thank you very much indeed, Senator Reynolds and Jenny Stanger. Very interesting to see what comes next.
Thanks for your interest, Geraldine.
That was West Australian Senator, Liberal Senator Linda Reynolds, and also Jenny Stanger, General Manager of the Salvation Army's Freedom Partnership. And a small correction, I referred incorrectly to an Australian government video that promised that farm work in Australia was a continual party. It was actually from a YouTube video offered by one of the many businesses trying to attract travellers here.